You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
So, we're 5 years old now. Technically, we're episode five, but I'm kind of excited because, you know, that means we're in kindergarten, so we get snack time. We have nap time.
No more naps.
No, I
want
ass naps.
Adults. No more naps.
This podcast isn't grown up. He'll be grown up when he finally gets to 18. Then he'll be grown up. Then he'll be able to drink in Europe. Right,
we'll have to record
in
Europe and just be turned.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's what we'll definitely do. But hey, everyone, welcome to We Are Air, OneOfUs.net's premier video game podcast. This is Christopher Herman, and I am joined by my co-host, John Romo. We're here to talk about all sorts of cool video game stuff today, specifically video game news, and our main topic, which is all about the history of Resident Evil. Now, we're not talking about the Resident Evil movies. Fuck those movies. And we're not talking about the 20, you know, spin-off titles of Resident Evil. We're just here to talk about the seven main games in the series. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But before I move on to that, let's talk about news. So, everyone might have heard about this story probably just in these past couple of days where Lindsay Lohan's GTA 5 lawsuit was dismissed. Now, as everyone knows, Lindsay Lohan sued Rockstar over the supposed use of her likeness in one of their promotional materials for the game, specifically like a blonde-haired young woman who was in like a red bikini who was taking a selfie of herself. Well, according to a New York State appellate court, has decided that to dismiss Lindsay Lohan's lawsuit against Take-Two Interactive over and Rockstar over what they claim was an unorthodox use of their likeness in Grand Theft Auto V. According to the decision, the suit must fail because the defendants did not use the plaintiff's name, portrait, or picture, and because Lohan's name is never used or referred to in the game. She herself is an actress in the game, and a photograph of her was never used. And of course, even Rockstar kind of recently commented when Lohan first filed the suit a number of years ago, said that she probably just did it for publicity purposes. Now, I'm not surprised by this. I thought it was ridiculous that she sued Rockstar and Take-Two Interactive over this. It's like, if anything, she probably could have sued them for playing smoking a whore that Trevor was fucking in the beginning of the game. Then I think she could have had a case for that.
Buzzing.
I think it was Johnny's girlfriend, who's actually in the DLC for GTA 4, the first part of the DLC.
I love that bit. Name. That's why I love that bit.
Yeah. But John, what do you have to say about
this? Two things that I love about this. Mm. One, I love when lawsuits like this are brought up.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh yeah, that was fucking going on 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. I completely forgot about this. And so it just pops up and it's like, oh yeah, it didn't matter. Like you knew it didn't matter 2 years ago. Mm. It's kind of just, it makes me laugh.
Sure.
Second thing. In the notes detail, it says that Lohan filed a 67-page complaint.
Yes.
And just something about the image of her sitting at the computer, like, typing out 67 pages of hard complaining is just funny.
Well, here's the thing. She definitely didn't write those 67 pages. You know, I believe that maybe she, like, 140 characters. I think that's her maximum, like, writing capability.
Well,
she got one of her people.
It's even funnier to imagine her pacing back and forth with her hands behind her back, reading it aloud, and just, like, to her secretary, dictated but not read.
Yeah.
Lindsay Lohan. And it's just, I don't know, that's funny to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ridiculous whole thing. I'm glad that it's over and we never have to hear about it again.
Until GTA 6.
Until GTA 6.
So, you know, never again.
Yeah, six, well, it'll come out in the next decade or so. But yeah, moving on from that story. So, Sony apparently has dropped the Uncharted movie from their release schedule. Now, the film was actually slated for release in June 30 of 2017, before it was dropped, which I think we all knew that wasn't happening. But also that Joe Carnahan, who apparently has been penning the screenplay for the movie, he still thinks it's happening, because he was even saying, specifically on his Twitter that he posted on September 2nd, that he was very happy with the opening of the film, at least the opening sequence. Now, I mean, So here's the thing. I mean, an Uncharted film, you know, has supposedly been in the works for, I guess, almost, what, the past 7 or 8 years now? Mm-hmm. I think it was first rumored around, like, 2009, which makes sense. That was when Uncharted 2 Among Thieves came out, which kind of made that franchise what it is today, and it put kind of PlayStation 3. Like, that was the game that everyone said, you need to buy a PlayStation 3 to play Uncharted 2.
Yeah.
But I mean, this project has been in development for a considerable amount of time. Originally, David O. Russell, who, you know, directed films like Silver Linings Playbook and most recently Joy, that he was originally tasked to direct the film, and he wanted to cast, I think, Mark Wahlberg as Nathan Drake. So it would have been, I mean, I'm here to say I'm going to hunt for treasure. That's what I'm going to do right now. Hope everyone's okay with that.
Damn, that's really good.
It's all right. It's fine. No, I'm not here to hurt anybody. Just
steal
treasure.
Say, so, wait. Say go Sox.
Go Sox. Yeah. Gotta go Sox. I love Boston. I'm a Boston kind of guy. But listen, when you live in the Northeast, you kind of take all the kinds of accents from all around it. Like, I can do my New York accent, I can do my Buffalonian accent, Boston accent. It all merges into you. That's how it is. It's a natural ability.
The great thing about this is that somehow, some way, I'm getting good vibrations in this app.
Oh, good. I'm glad you are, John. I'm actually incredibly sick right now, and I have a splitting headache, but I'm glad you're getting the good vibrations. I'm glad. I want to put that out there. I want all our fans to get those good vibrations, everybody else. But, no, and then,
pump
of course,
it, pump it.
Yes. But then, of course, there were a ton of other people attached to this project. There's also Neil Berger, who you may have not heard of his name, but he's probably best known for directing Limitless with Bradley Cooper. A really great film. And then also Seth Gordon, who I guess was one of the people behind the Horrible Bosses movies. And I guess I remember when supposedly Seth Rogen and Adam Goldberg were writing the screenplay for this. So this thing has been going on for a while. Mm-hmm. Sony wants this to happen. For me, I don't.
Yeah, I don't need it.
Because one, the Uncharted games are so cinematic to begin with. And I just don't want to see, a filmmaker's approach to their own version of this because of the fact that Nolan North is Nathan Drake.
Yeah.
Richard McGonagall is Sully, you know, and all these other wonderful voice actors and actors who just kind of give life to these characters. I just don't want to see someone else's interpretation because we don't need it.
Yeah. Which I will say I am surprised that at a time when we're finally getting that Assassin's Creed movie, that it ends up falling through. Or it could be a wait-and-see situation. Let's see how Assassin's Creed does. Mm-hmm. And if it does well, then we could be seeing Uncharted soon after. Mm-hmm. But damn, I don't really want that.
Yeah.
Also, didn't really want an Assassin's Creed movie either.
Well, we're getting it, you know, for better or for worse. We'll see how that film is. But speaking of Assassin's Creed, so there's been, like, a lot of rumors the past few months that of an Ezio a remastered collection for the new-gen consoles. And apparently, it's been, you know, it's been taken down, but apparently on Amazon Italy has given the seemingly outed Assassin's Creed Ezio collection a release date of November 17th of this year. According to Amazon Italy, the collection will comprise of Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, and Assassin's Creed Revelations, each remastered, of course, for the PS4 and the Xbox One, and along with all the associated DLC and the two short films, which I think was Assassin's Creed Ember, which kind of like took place like after Revelations when Ezio was an old man. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of the other one off the top of my head. Now, this kind of makes sense because originally there was also an early report based on a Korean ratings board listing for the games. Now, I guess the Amazon lists the games for a price tag of 50 euros. I'm assuming that's euros because I don't know what the fuck symbol that is. But then it's basically $50 for all the people, you know, real money, which is dollars.
Real people money.
You know, not all your pounds or your euros.
Not that
all
Monopoly
that garbage,
stuff.
Or your pesos or whatever the hell it is. Yeah, Monopoly. Yeah, might as well be Monopoly money. Thank you, John. It's very, very true. It's going to be a $50 collection. First of all, I mean, are you excited for this collection and would you want to play these games?
Well, if you listen to the last step, which you should have listened to the last step, you'll know that one of my most overhyped games was Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah.
And that is because this trilogy of games is some of my favorite from that console era. Mm-hmm. Ezio is a great character full of charisma. Mm-hmm. This also makes perfect sense.
Requiem Pace.
This also makes perfect sense because Ubisoft decided to take a year off with the Assassin's Creed franchise, but those pockets don't want to take that year off.
No.
So we need something.
It does make sense that, of course, that they would still want to put out an Assassin's Creed game, but it's an Assassin's Creed several games that people actually really enjoy, yeah. and they're not tired of those specific games. So I think that'd be great. I wouldn't mind playing those games again. Certainly 2 and Brotherhood, which I thought were kind of the standouts of the earlier Assassin's Creed entries.
Yeah, because 1 was all promise but no fulfillment, mm-hmm. and 3 is ass.
Yes, it was. but apparently we're also going to be getting another game on a different system, which specifically Super Mario Maker is going to be released on the 3DS this December. Now, this was announced during Nintendo's most recent Direct. According to Kotaku, the 3DS game, which was released on the Wii U in 2015, comes with 100 built-in courses, and you can also play courses designed on the Wii U version of the Super Mario Maker, although not all will be compatible with the 3DS. You also won't be able to search for courses by course ID. Also, unlike the Wii U version, Super Mario Maker for 3DS social functions, like the sharing and designing courses, will be available primarily through local wireless and street pass. However, except for the mystery mushroom, every course design tool on the Wii U version will be available on the 3DS's Super Mario Maker. So, now, John, I don't know if you played Super Mario Maker last year, but for me, it was one of the most impressive kind of titles to come out for the Wii U, because it was something that I think fans have been asking for so long, was just the ability to create their own kind of 2D Mario levels.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm happy that this is coming to the 3DS, even though it's a severely limited, like, you know, or just kind of dumbed down version of the title, which I think is kind of disappointing.
I think it renders it almost useless.
Mm-hmm.
Because isn't the fun of Super Mario Maker to, like, download other people's levels, like really fun levels? That was,
yeah.
I never played it, but I still had fun, like, going on, watching games journalists, like, challenge each other with things that they made and
sure.
easily distribute it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's another instance of, one, Nintendo may not quite understand how the internet works, and two, they're more focused on the Japan customers, because I think, as we've discussed previously, people in Japan are much more accustomed to playing together.
Oh, yeah, yeah, true,
playing together. Yeah. There's a lot more people in the streets with their 3DSs playing with each other. Mm-hmm. So that's how Monster Hunter got so big.
Yep.
So this makes a lot more sense in Japan. Here, I just don't feel like I see enough 3DSs in the streets.
Sure. And I think this might be just the last hurrah for the 3DS, because we know that the NX, which of course is rumored to be like a handheld, which then you can also attach to your television and play games. Like, Nintendo's, I think, just making the effort to push as many of their previous titles on the 3DS. It's like, we need to, you know, drum up the excitement for what we're doing. And
yeah.
I think this is fine. I think, I mean, again, Mario Maker, it's a really good, just like, platforming, side-scrolling game. You know, and I, again, what is disappointing is the fact that you can't, even though the creation tool is built into this game, mm-hmm. yeah, the ability that you can't, like, just share it and specifically search for these courses, you know, the courses that you really like using the course ID, I think is that's pretty disappointing.
I do also want to say another little thing that came out of the Direct was Yoshi's Woolly World is also coming to 3DS.
Yeah.
And
I don't fucking care.
But it's so cute and adorable.
Yoshi fucking sucks.
Well, Yoshi's adorable.
You big Yoshi cookie fan, John? Just, you love that, you
wait,
love that game?
The Tetris Smash, basically?
Yeah, I haven't
played it. Tetris Smash is the shit.
Mm.
It has such a good soundtrack. We're going to get into this one day, I tell you.
Yeah, are we?
But I like the idea that all of the Wii U's games just kind of, like, you know, low-res it a little bit and put it on the 3DS.
Yeah.
You know, it really shows how much the Wii U does not matter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad, even though I thought it had a couple of great titles. The fact that it's on the Wii U kind of made me like, oh, that's disappointing. It would have been better on a better system.
But isn't that always
the
thing with Nintendo these past two times?
Certainly if the Wii and certainly if the Wii U. But, yeah, moving on from that, so from companies that continue to frustrate us. So Konami has announced Metal Gear Solid 5, the definitive experience, or the definitive edition, or whatever you want to call it. But apparently this collection will be released on October 11th in the U.S., and it includes not only Metal Gear Solid 5, the Phantom Pain, but also Metal Gear Ground Zeroes, and all the DLC for both single-player games, as well as, of course, Metal Gear Online, which actually was a surprisingly decent multiplayer. Which I guess that makes sense is why they went with Metal Gear Survive. But yeah, apparently it's collecting all the past DLC, and I guess it's also including additional mother-based currency, which even though I played the game, I guess that you use that currency to buy upgrades for Mother Base and to expand it out and everything, and people want to build their zoo. I think this, look, I mean, it makes sense why Konami is doing this, not only to, again, to try to, I guess...
Because they want more money.
They want more money. I mean, that's pretty much it. And I guess it's like, hey, we know that we got Metal Gear Survive, and maybe you're not so hot in that, but hey, we got this new, brand new collection for Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. I mean, the one thing I think that stands out about this is that the box art, which is not in front of us, but what I was looking at, is beautiful. It looks like something like out of a kind of classic poster from... like a Raiders of the Lost Ark or Blade.
Oh, yeah.
It's really cool art style, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a movie poster. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, which makes sense because those games are in themselves very cinematic. But, yeah, I mean, for people who just weren't able to play it, yeah, I think this is a great collection, even though you're giving more money to Konami, which I know a lot of people don't want to do. But, again, I think it's definitely worth it. I really enjoyed The Phantom Pain. But speaking of companies that have burned bridges, recently in an interview with IGN, Peter Moore spoke about his former like executive experience working for Sega, specifically saying that he believed that Sega burned too many bridges with the Saturn, which is one of their older consoles, which forced them to exit the hardware business after the Dreamcast failed to take off. Now, this is according to his quote. When he said, "When I first arrived at Sega, that was our first challenge. How do we somewhat apologize for the Saturn and then really position a fresh start with the Dreamcast?" Moore shared on the month's episode of IGN Unfiltered. According to Moore, Sega wanted to leave off the company branding and simply call it its next console the Dreamcast, but he insisted it be called the Sega Dreamcast. The minimal research I had time to do indicated there was still tremendous goodwill, which there still is today, for the Sega brand. So I insisted on putting the Sega Dreamcast on the box and calling it the Sega Dreamcast. Unfortunately, however, Sega's efforts weren't enough to revitalize the company's place in the hardware business, with Moore acknowledging that Saturn's failure, coupled with the Dreamcast's lack of success, was a real challenge that put the final nail in the coffin, leaving Sega with no other choice but to relinquish its position as a console manufacturer. I mean, yeah, this is kind of the sorry state with like Sega, that the fact that...
It
makes a lot of sense, and even though I thought the Dreamcast was a decent console, it was to a certain degree ahead of its time because it used discs. And
oh, it's so hot. I love the Dreamcast,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, and then like the N64 used cartridges. Yeah, but yeah, mistakes were made, and Sega's been continuing to make those mistakes for years. But
yeah, like if you don't know about the story, like when Sega dropped the Saturn, they gave everyone a week notice? Not even a week notice. I think at E3 they were like, "And it's out now."
Yeah.
And everyone was like, "What?"
Yeah. Well, you think in your head, like, that's a great thing to do, right?
Yeah. But then like no one's ready. No one's prepared. Mm-hmm. You don't have enough games ready. And
yeah.
then the
PlayStation well, that's the thing.
And then the PlayStation comes what, like 3 months later and kills you.
The original PS1, that had some amazing titles on. Such an impressive console. But yeah, I mean the
including Crash Bandicoot?
Yeah. It was a bestseller, but it was not a good game.
I love Crash.
None of the.
It's part of my childhood. Is the PS1?
Yeah, so yeah, Sonic's part of a lot of people's childhood, but that doesn't change the fact that those games still suck and will forever suck.
What's even like good on the Saturn? What do people talk about?
Knights? I didn't own one.
Knights? People like Knights?
I didn't know. I didn't own that. I wasn't a Sega kid. I was a Nintendo kid.
Okay, I can see that. I did have a Dreamcast and played the hell out of Power Stone, Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
All those.
Oh, okay, yeah, Soul Calibur.
Power Stone is the shit. No one talks about it enough, but I love Power Stone.
Didn't a Power Stone like game come out recently or something like that?
Not that I am aware
of. Or it was on the Xbox Live Arcade.
I think Power Stone 1 and 2.
I think that might have been it. But yeah. So I mean, yeah, some of this news is kind of sad and depressing, but let's end it on at least a somewhat hopeful story. So apparently, this is according to Kotaku. 2 months ago, a Redditor named, I cannot pronounce that name.
Can't believe you were even going to try.
Redditor wrote a post thanking Bethesda for Fallout 4, which apparently helped him take his mind off a recent family tragedy. According to the Reddit poster, "I spent over 500 hours in the game, and it was partly due to not only the fun gameplay, the new survival mode, and just the game in general, but also because my dad passed away last year at age 56, and he didn't take it well. Now, according to, he dealt with the pain, he made a bipedal sentry robot," which I guess that's one of the DLCs where you can actually build your own robots in the game, "and he named it after his father. The name of the bot was GR36, as his father's name was Greg. Then recently, apparently over the summer, the Redditor who actually finished Fallout 4, he got a call from his 24-year-old brother. Well, he got a call that his 24-year-old brother was in the ICU. Sadly, his brother passed away, and I guess his friends eventually started a GoFundMe. And apparently, Bethesda started to hear about this, and they sent this kind of wonderful care package to him, you know, to say thank you for your support of our games and you love the Fallout 4. But even better was that in the most recent DLC for Fallout 4, which I think is called the Nuka World DLC, mm-hmm. which about it's about like kind of raiders. You go to this giant raider camp. They actually added in his brother, known as Good Guy Evan, where apparently like anytime you come across him. The character will try to help out the player character, and this is kind of like very nice, and he's very jokey, and he does all these ridiculous kind of puns, very similar to this Redditor's brother. And I just thought, for me, I thought this was a nice story to kind of end the news segment on, because we're always talking about all these depressing things and people suing people and failed consoles and failed Kickstarters and games.
Everything's just so negative all the time.
It's very negative, and to see that this guy who, you know, spent so much time with this game, like part of his grieving and just kind of he wanted to, like, an escape. And to, you know, disappear into this game, the deal of his grief, and the fact that after all this tragedy, the fact that Bethesda recognized that, and you know, to basically again to thank him for support, but also to honor his family like that, I thought that's a really sweet thing. When they didn't even have to do that.
No, and it's one of the most beautiful things about video games, I think.
Yeah,
is that they're methods for people to escape and to cope with their own issues. A review that will be out around the time of this episode, Hyper Light Drifter.
Mm-hmm.
That game was, you know, born out of the heart condition of its developer.
Yeah.
And you should go check out a Vice video. I'll put it in the link to one of the reviews of this app, where it just, like, kind of details that and his journey a little bit. And, you know, I think that's why games exist. I think that's why I love this medium. Like, I got into games when my uncle, like, he went to jail. He gave me his N64 before he left, and mm-hmm. it was kind of like, you know, that's my little reminder of him. Or when I went to college, I played To the Moon. You know, I was kind of missing my little brother, and anyone who's played To the Moon knows it. You know, there's a very important key moment in the game,
yeah.
you know, relating to a brother, and it's like those moments are why I think the medium is so important,
mm-hmm.
At least to someone like me, I think, you know. And I love to hear these kinds of stories that
yeah.
someone is touching someone with their art, because, again, games are art.
Absolutely. So.
1998. I'll never forget it. It was the year when those grisly murders occurred in the Arklay Mountains. Soon after, the news was out to the whole world, revealing that it was the fault of a secret viral experiment conducted by the international pharmaceutical enterprise, Umbrella. The virus broke out in a nearby mountain community, Raccoon City, and hit the peaceful little town with a devastating blow crippling its very foundation.
I hope that's not Chris's blood. John, you were almost a John sandwich.
I am quoting, well, I'm in my own version of his quotes, the great Barry from Resident Evil. You know, again.
Those lines only get better with age.
Yeah, oh, man, let me tell you, that dialogue's so well written. Capcom, they knew what they were doing even back then. It's like, and it translates so well to the movies, right? Well, that's the thing, it's like, how bad are your movies where, like, the first game, the acting in the first game of Resident Evil is better than in the adaptation of it? That's kind of sad.
I like the first movie.
It's the best of the Resident, because that whole cinematic franchise just goes off the fucking rails, where you got a character, Alice, who's not in any of the games. She starts using psychic powers. She's blowing up things.
Is that what's happening in the film
franchise? Oh, yeah. If you've not watched... Oh,
I just watched the first one.
In two, in Apocalypse, I think, yeah, it's Apocalypse, she gets, like, psychic powers. And in three... when it takes place in Las Vegas, she gets into a psychic fight with a psychic zombie.
Really?
And then that's the last one I saw. Apparently there's
clones in another one, right? I think.
Is there clones?
I could have sworn one time I saw the ending of one of them.
Yeah.
And there were just like other hers in like sacks.
I think you're right. They did the alien resurrection thing.
Yeah.
They
that kind of
fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's like, kill me. But yeah, hopefully someone will kill that franchise, and hopefully it will die. But we're talking about the video games of Resident Evil, not those fucking films. And specifically, just for everyone to know, so Resident Evil 4 HD was just released very recently.
Yeah.
And I started playing it, and John will start playing it shortly. But eventually we want to put out an all review in the game, just because we want to, and we want to replay that game.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the best kind of survival shooters from, really, just ever, I think. Certainly in the last, like, 20 years. It's always on the top of everyone's list.
And outside of Smash, it's one of my favorite GameCube experiences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it actually is. It launched on the GameCube. But we'll get into more Resident Evil 4, but... So, for our main topic, we're just going to be talking about the six entries in the Resident Evil franchise so far. All the games that we've played or beaten or what have you. Because if we talked about every single Resident Evil game that was released, we'd be here all goddamn night. We'd just
Outbreak. Umbrella Corps.
Operation Raccoon City, that kind of the Gears of War.
Deception.
Version. Deception and all
I don't actually even know.
You know what?
Reconciliation.
Yeah. Revelations. I think all those.
We're nailing it.
All those subtitles.
Hold on. I do want to give a quick shout out to the one that's like a light rail gun game that was on the Wii. That one's kind of fun.
Yeah, but it's on the Wii. I don't want to play it.
Isn't that kind of how you say
it? You got to do the motion.
That's what you say about everything on the Wii. But it's on the Wii. Would have been better on a different console.
Well, yeah, it probably would have been. But even then. But we're specifically talking about 1 through 6, and then we'll also hint at 7. But, I mean, first of all, the first Resident Evil game, came out in 1996. Originally, in Japan, of course, it was called Biohazard. But for a lot of people, this was their kind of first introduction to a survival horror game. And for me, it was definitely one of the first games I think I ever bought for the PlayStation 1. And it kind of opened up, kind of the survival horror experiences for games for me. And specifically, just kind of like, I just remember like that opening sequence, or not so much the opening sequence, but when you first encounter a zombie in that game, and he slowly turns his head around at you, and it's so fucking creepy. Even back then, now it probably looks fucking ridiculous.
No, but it's still a great image. Every single year... If we're talking Resident Evil, that's bound to be the article lead image, because it's a great iconic image. Mm-hmm. And to this day, Res it up a little bit, and it's scary, and they have Resed it up before on 8 different consoles.
As John and I were saying off mic, I think there's been like 4 HD remasters, or whatever you want to call it, you know, remasters. Director's cuts and extended editions of Resident Evil 1. But for me, like I said, it was my introduction to survival horror, and... all these ridiculous fucking characters. And even though I kind of look fondly back at that game and, you know, for its creativity and just like, you know, you had to, I mean, it was hard because it uses tank controls and mm-hmm. everything like that. And you have to conserve your ammo. And at that time, I that's not how I play games. Like, I'm fucking shooting everything. I don't give a shit. But here it's like, I need these like 7 bullets. They need to last me like for the next half hour. And most of the time you just run away from the enemies. But some of the things that kind of bothered me about the game, and it gets kind of, worse or better, depending better on which title you're actually playing, is the voice acting and just like the characters. Mm-hmm. Because again, as we mentioned, Barry is one of the fucking worst characters in the Resident Evil game. He sucks so much. But even he's not as bad as Chris Redfield, who I feel is just like the dumbest. Just like every time I'm like, oh, I fucking hate Chris Redfield. He fucking sucks. He's like a dumb jock. And you know, I was all about Jill Valentine. Even Jill was a better character because. One, she actually got more weapons mm-hmm. as you played, because you had the option of either, I think, playing at different times Chris Redfield or Jill Valentine. And, like, for Jill, you have all these cool skills. Like, you get a lockpick and you get to unlock all these
doors. She is the master of unlocking.
Yeah, she does. And Chris just gets, like, he takes more damage. And that's really fucking it. He's just, again, he's just a big dumb jock. It's like, can you fucking
All that beef can absorb more bullets.
Yeah. But, I mean, John, I mean, what was your kind of experience with Resident Evil 1? Some of your favorite moments? Favorite moments.
The first two came out 96, 98. So I was 3 and 5, respectively. So way too little to be playing these games.
Oh, yeah.
But also, when you're raised by very young parents who,
he'll take
it. All their siblings, like, are even younger and really close to my age currently, they'll let you watch at least. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the first times where I realized that, like, oh, games can be scary.
They can be scary.
And there are games out there that I should not play. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, like, it was one of the first times I was, like, I got my eyes on, like, M-rated, bloody type of video games. And I remember my parents actually did not want me to play or watch it be played, but my aunt was like, no, it's fine. And so, like, I thought my aunt was so edgy and cool for letting me watch this zombie game. And since then, like, just there are certain images I have of just watching it jump through a character walk through the corridor. I remember being terrified by when the dog jumps through the window.
Yep.
And I remember seeing trailers for it in a demo disc I had on the PS1. Mm. Is there an alligator in this game somewhere?
That's the sequel.
Okay.
That's my favorite of the old school Resident Evil
games.
Why
the fuck is there a giant alligator?
Yeah. Why
there's so
a giant snake? No, there's a giant snake in Resident Evil 1. That's what you're thinking.
Okay, yeah.
The Resident Evil franchise likes to make giant animals. You know, because
which are terrifying.
They absolutely are. I mean, snakes, ooh. But it's like, I guess the T-virus or all the different versions of the T or the Z or the whatever, the G-virus that they make, that Umbrella Corp. That's the other thing. The big bads in all these Resident Evil games is Umbrella, which, you know, is a nice, friendly corporation that just wants everyone to live. But, yeah, they're obsessed with just making giant animals for some reason. And I guess apparently a zombie plague makes an animal bigger.
It affects everyone differently, I guess so.
But, I mean, yeah, speaking of giant alligators, yes, I mean, Resident Evil 2, my personal favorite of the kind of the old school Resident Evil games. Again, it was released in 1998, so 2 years after the original Resident Evil. And we're introduced to my favorite character in all the Resident Evil games is Leon S. Kennedy. That's a fucking name, man. You know what it makes? It's the S. It's the S that makes the name. Because it's like Christopher J. Herman, and then you got Leon S. Kennedy. It's like you get that just that one initial.
That
there.
Middle initial.
It just makes, and it's just an awesome thing. And he, again, I think it takes place several months after the first game, which took place in a mansion. Here, what I liked about it is they kind of expanded the world, but still kept it claustrophobic. And still had the same gameplay mechanics, but it was basically all Raccoon City that you're exploring and kind of progressing towards. And again, it introduced some of this. I mean, it looked better than the original game. It had a much better character in Leon S. Kennedy, and it had a giant fucking alligator who was consistently popped up throughout the entire game for some reason.
What I love about it is it kind of has that movie trope. First,
yeah,
rookie cop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a total... That's the thing about the Resident Evil franchise, especially, too. It's a B-movie. It's
yeah.
a B-horror.
That's what I was going to say when you were talking about the kind of bad voice acting in one. Is, like, at this point, it's kind of charming.
Yeah.
Because it works as this, like, B-70s, 80s genre zombie film.
Yeah,
like
George
that
Romero
type of
thing. Yeah.
And so it just makes it more fun. And, like, because at this point, we have the serious games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wonderful to go back to the other ones in a B-schlocky type, you know, mood.
Yeah. Yeah, and then of course the sequel also introduced Claire Redfield, Chris Redfield's much more tolerable sister. So I was fucking happy for that. But yeah, again, the Resident Evil 2 just kind of upped the ante when it came to exploration, puzzle solving, and then also it improved the combat, which, you know, even the first Resident Evil game, even though it kind of introduced, like, you know, conserving your ammo, it was just still frustrating to move around. And you can say that ended the tension, but at the same time, it was just difficult. Resident Evil 2 kind of improved that. And then we kind of saw the evolution again with Resident Evil 3 Nemesis, which I guess I kind of consider to be the redheaded stepchild.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
games.
Even though I haven't gotten the opportunity to play all the way through.
Some people seem to have, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gotten the opportunity to play all the way through the first two games.
Right,
even,
right, right.
But I still am aware of, you know, things, story beats, Wesker's a bad guy. Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? The guy wears sunglasses everywhere and in every, you know, whether it's sunny out or dark.
You know, like story beats, dumb lines,
yes,
weird
yes.
little jump beats. I know these things because they're so steeped in the gamer culture.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
You'll just hear puns and references made to them. I know barely anything about Nemesis other than Nemesis is in it.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing of the game. And, you know, Nemesis, who's also featured in Resident Evil 2 Apocalypse, the movie, he's probably the only good thing about that film. But yeah, he was this enemy that would, you couldn't kill him. He would just constantly show up and you have to run away from him constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and he was terrifying. He really was scary. It's like, fuck, I can't escape this threat. And you kind of saw that repeated in kind of later horror games, specifically like the Silent Hill series with Pyramid Head and Silent Hill 2. So it was kind of that. They kind of, the inclusion of Nemesis kind of affected other survival horror games going forward. But the game, like, even itself, I think the problem with it was that it felt in a lot of ways like a repeat of 2. Even the fact that it actually took place in Raccoon City, and it was both a prequel and a sequel to 2, where you actually play as Jill Valentine, and it's kind of takes place during the events of Leon S. Kennedy trying to save all these people and escape Raccoon City. So I think in that way why it's not as remembered as fondly as 1 or 2, because it just repeats so much of those first two games. But I still think it's important, and certainly better than some of the later entries in the games. And we'll get into that in a minute, but...
Before we move on to, I think, the shift in this franchise...
Yes.
Do you think... Especially with Resident Evil 7, kind of returning, planning to return to these roots, as they say.
At least turn to the horror.
Yeah. Do you think there's room for this type of thing? Do you think gamers want it? Do you think the mainstream audience wants it? Because I think Resident Evil 4 has, as we'll get into, had crossover appeal. Is this something that can withstand in 2016? Because we don't see many Silent Hills either. You know, you mentioned that franchise.
Well, fucking Konami ran that fucking series into the ground.
As they will do everything.
Yeah. But, no, I think there is room for it because there's always an audience for it. What we'll get into this when we talk about 4, 5, and 6, but Capcom, what they seem to want to do is that they want to turn Resident Evil into an action franchise because they saw the success of specifically Call of Duty at the time, and that blew up with Modern Warfare, even though, you know, Resident Evil has nothing to do with Modern Warfare. Capcom didn't care. They said, we have a very recognizable property. We have these movies, which, although critically fucking suck, people are going to see them and they're making a lot of money. And those are far from being horror films. You know, they're action. They're action movies. Mm-hmm. You know, you got fucking Alice using psychic power, using guns, shooting everybody. It's like, what the hell's happening? So, of course, they in their mind, they're thinking, we need to appeal to a larger base. But at the same time, they alienated all of their Resident Evil fans, like the fans of survival horror. And as we've seen recently, there is a huge market for just true survival horror games, or just horror games in general. We saw that with a lot of indie titles. Specifically, I say indie, but really, I don't even like to use that term, just horror games, specifically with Outlast and Amnesia. And I think that's why Resident Evil wants a return to that, where borrowing, in NPT, borrowing from those games, but also applying that kind of Resident Evil vibe to it, which, again, with the zombies and the kind of the whole B-movie experience and and all that kind of fun stuff.
Because I will have to say, like, I think now is the time for it. I think
it's needed.
We went through this big shift where action was everything. Mm-hmm. New styles, new action. So like you said, with the Call of Duty franchise, everything is modern now. Yep. And you'll even see a pushback with Battlefield 1, which I was talking I was talking to my friends earlier. It's like, I'm ready to go back. I'm ready for this shift. So like, we'll get into it with 4, 5, and 6, but as that went on, I was like, now I'm getting bored with this. Yes. And I want to return to that old, a new experience. Mm-hmm. And I think now is the perfect time with VR you know, a really good highlight in sound and experiences. And I think people are more, at least the gaming community, is more prepped for these weirder experiences, these short form type things. And I think Resident Evil will have to bring it because there are plenty of indie people, like you said, and, you know, people trying weird different things to get scared. Five Nights at Freddy's somehow produced five games in 3 years, but it shows that people want this horror thing, and there's cheaper ways to get your fix.
True.
And so I think, you know, we can talk about it a little bit later if we want, but Resident Evil 7 has an uphill climb, I think.
No, it certainly does, but I think that they're actually making smart choices, specifically how they're approaching what they're showing so far, and they're saying all the right things, where this is a return to, maybe not even return to the same kind of classic style as those games, obviously not because it's first person, but just like, we want to give our fans a horror game, and to give audiences a horror game, and I think it could be a new entry for people who have had no experience with the Resident Evil franchise.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm personally excited for it. I think why other people who may not have been fans of Resident Evil are excited for it. But kind of moving on to arguably probably the most popular Resident Evil game?
Yes.
Resident Evil 4, which I think was Shinji Mikami's last Resident Evil game that he worked on. So, you know, I don't think we did mention Shinji Mikami before, but he was the developer behind, I think, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And 4 kind of made the jump from being like this kind of tank controls type of style gameplay, and it became a third-person shooter to a certain extent. But again, still a survival horror game, but what I liked so much about this was not only because it's the return of Leon S. Kennedy, who should be the main character in most of the Resident Evil games because he's the best character, but it made the Resident Evil franchise so much more cinematic and so much kind of like a cool kind of a B-horror film where it takes place in this kind of fictional Spanish like a town and like the outskirts of whatever, like the super rural area. And again, it kind of introduces this total B-movie plot where the president's daughter is kidnapped by this cult that has some type of connection to Umbrella, and Leon S. Kennedy, who's with the Secret Service, goes to try to save her, and he encounters all this fucking ridiculous, really weird shit and all these wonderfully just
goofy characters,
yeah, but still goofy, but also just kind of disturbing too.
It's something you'll see. I think this is when Capcom was having a lot of fun with writing characters, because it also leans into Dead Rising. There's a lot of crazy, weird things going on in there, and Resident Evil 4 is where it all kind of starts, them really exploring these demented, psychotic, yet fun characters.
No, absolutely. And, like, yeah, even, like, some of the bosses, or just, like, the main villains, and, like, you have the village chieftain. I think he's just called village chieftain, but he's terrifying. He's a bald guy with a beard. Then you also, I think, there's, like, Salazar and some other guy that starts with an S. I can't remember the top of my head. But the little, like, dwarf man who is just, he's, like, dressed as Napoleon. I guess he has a Napoleon complex, but he's this total, like, psychopath, and he has this, like, castle, and he's just part of the cult. Again, the game is just so much fun. However, I think Resident Evil 4 spelled the downfall, or the decline in quality for the Resident Evil franchise. And, like, I will say this, the first two-thirds of that game, even before I touch on that, the other thing I want to mention is, okay, so, what's the name of the president's daughter in the game?
Ashley.
Fucking sucks. Not a great character. And the other thing is that apparently she's like 14 or something like that in the game.
Wait, what?
Really? Yeah, she's like
14. At first I was going to feel really worried for like... attracted to her?
They give her the biggest breasts.
It's fine, ever. Though. It's fine because I was
ever.
I was
and they
12.
Jiggle.
I was
they just
12,
jiggle.
13 at the time, so I'm fine.
Oh, you're fine.
I was fine then.
We can't be. We're not fine now. We can't.
Well,
say
I haven't
that.
Played it, so.
Yeah.
I haven't played it since.
But yeah, this thing, Ashley, she sucks. And the other thing is that she is Leon.
Yeah.
Leon. Oh, that voice just
a new school
drives
now.
Into you. Oh my God, it's like. Oh. But yeah, the other thing is that you give her the most ridiculously. Large breasts ever, and if you watch it, because you know part of the game she's following you around when she's not fucking kidnapped for the third or fourth time or whatever, but her boobs constantly jiggle. It's like, guys, come on. Don't do that. Don't make me feel this way. Don't make me have these feelings.
Well, they couldn't let their colleagues over at Konami have all the boob physics.
Of course fun. Not. No, well, that's what influenced Quiet eventually. So fucking weird. But yeah, the thing is, so the first two-thirds of that game, I think, are very good. Everything up to, like, when it first begins, when you get chased by a fucking giant boulder, all the way after when you, to the end of, like, the castle segment.
Yeah.
To me, the game stops being a horror game when you finally get to that island, and you just start fighting mercenaries and giant guys wielding, you know, miniguns. It's like, what happened? It's like, it just took a nose. I've been, like, it was weird, because when I was playing the game back in 2005... no one seemed to bring that up in their reviews, that the game just totally just, it makes a complete just weird change in direction in the style of gameplay. It's like, why isn't anyone talking about this? And why since then, you know, for 5 and 6, which became complete action games, everyone blames that, oh no, that was the fall of Resident Evil, when it started to decline in quality. It's like, I say that the last third of Resident Evil 4 was when that franchise started declining quality.
Well, I'll have to, you know, finish up my playthrough before our full review and everything, but I'm just thinking, well, it's a long game.
It is, yeah.
And how like long can
almost
you,
20 hours.
How long can you actually sustain that feeling of dread and horror? Like, asking them to sustain that for 20 hours seems like a big task.
Sure.
So, I think trying to fit it naturally in the story where you see it get bigger... and, you know, finally come up to this sort of, oh, this is who's behind it all. They've got firepower. And, like, letting just, you know, you at that point have fun with the controls and shooting and everything.
Yeah.
Is, I don't know, it seems like a good way to end the game. Especially because, you know, it being slow paced the whole time probably would not have been as fun. It would have dragged it along, I think. But, again, I got to play it again.
Sure.
And we'll definitely dive into this
During our review, yeah, I definitely want to get into it more. And just to, because I haven't gotten to that section yet. I'm still in, like, the opening, like, I think chapter 2, which is, like, after the village. And I think I have beaten the chieftain yet, or I'm about to beat the chieftain. I can't remember. It's early on in the game still. But, yeah, I definitely want to continue talking about that more. But definitely, moving on from Resident Evil 4, we do start to get into, like, what the fuck happened with this franchise in Resident Evil 5, which, by the way, is the best-selling a title in the entire series is Resident Evil 5. And it reintroduces Chris Redfield, who continues to fucking suck, and who's somehow gotten beefier for whatever reason. That guy just keeps packing on muscles. Like, 10 years later, he looked like a normal
Those
guy.
Guns
but he
crazy.
Just becomes... But then he's also joined by one of the worst... And this is the other thing. Resident Evil 5 makes the huge mistake of making Resident Evil a co-op game. And, you know, it's like, that's... one, that just doesn't work for survival horror, but introduces one of the worst just co-op characters ever in Sheba, who fucking sucks. She is so annoying, and she gets in the way constantly. It's like, I don't know why you're here. I guess, you know, it's, to me, and really the whole plot of the game where you're basically, you're working for this new organization, I think called the Super Zombie Killer Task Force or whatever. And you go to Africa, there's this new version of the T-Virus, and it's infected all these people. And of course, lo and behold, you find out who's behind it, Albert Wesker. Who, I will give it this, is probably the best part in the game. Not his last boss battle, because that fucking's awful, but just his character. And the fact is, he gets the most amount of screen time than he ever has.
And he also has a reason to wear shades.
He does, yes, yeah, he has. He has creepy zombie eyes in this time. But, for me, because I remember when Resident Evil 5 came out in 2009, and a year before, Dead Space, the first Dead Space had come out, which was kind of like this is what survival horror
needs to be.
Well,
that game is so good.
It's
still
good, and I want a remastered version of Dead Space. That's what I fucking want. That first game is excellent.
The sequel also, or not the sequel, the third one also made the same
problem.
Yeah,
yes, it did. It was like, we're going to make the mistakes that we said we would never make. Dead Space 3, that's a sad, sad game. But yeah, Resident Evil 5, it pretty much... It's funny. Like, in the opening chapter of that game, you kill more enemies than in the entirety of Resident Evil 4. Which, by the way,
they're all black.
They're all black. Well, not they. So Capcom, when they started to first market the game and kind of show it at, like, you know, trade shows and such, one of the big complaints was among a lot of people was that you're just killing black people throughout the entire game. And Capcom went, I guess it's kind of racist, right? And so basically they started to include all different kinds of nationalities. So you get to kill a bunch of Arab people as well, so don't worry about that. So that's fine, right?
I don't get my phone call immediately.
Yeah, but, oh, jeez. But yeah, I mean, my biggest problem with the game is that it's not a horror game whatsoever. There's not a single moment in the entire game where I ever felt scared. I felt frustrated at times because of just like, I got to do this fucking, not motion control, but, you know, button mashing bullshit, which is kind of carried on throughout the entire series. But it's progressively worse in 5, and later on even gets even worse in 6.
It's because, like, when it was introduced in 4, it was the era of the, like, that was the rise of the QuickTime event. You know, we got God of War. Both of those games is what I associate QuickTime events with. So when 4 and God of War did it, it was fine. I think now it's annoying.
Yeah. If Telltale's not doing it, then, you know, they're the only ones that kind of can get away with it.
They're the only ones who can do it.
Yeah, but now it's like, we don't want that bullshit. But what was your general experience playing Resident Evil 5 and your initial reactions?
The decline with quality it perfectly mirrors my decline with time spent. Mm-hmm. Because I beat Resident Evil 4, and I think I played it through twice, and I'm about to play it a third time.
Yeah.
5, I played partway through and was just like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
This is not great. And then 6, I did not care about.
Yeah.
I read that it was like...
So you didn't play 6?
No.
All right. Well, we're going to end at 6 in a second, but I just want to briefly touch on a few things.
Go ahead.
But yeah, some of the other things that... So the game also reintroduces Jill Valentine, who apparently died off screen. And she comes back, you know, as a super sexy zombie, which they put her in the most skin tight outfit ever, and her boobies are all out and they're all jiggling and stuff like that. And there's this one particular sequence in the game where you're fighting her because she's brainwashed by Albert Wesker, where you have to constantly grab her chest to remove this weird zombie device on her, and her boobs are just jiggling the whole time. It's like, guys, enough of the boob jiggling.
Oh, I'm so loving this. I am so loving this.
So yeah, that was another weird thing that just happened. And then the other thing, which I thought was one of the worst. Probably the worst parts of the game for me, and just kind of a sad end for a really cool character, which is the last boss battle with Albert Wesker, who, he infects himself with the T-Virus. He becomes super mutated Albert Wesker. Takes place in like a volcano where you're fighting him, and where you defeat him by punching a boulder repeatedly until he falls into the lava. It's like, wow, what a sad... And he gets blown up by a rocket launcher.
No, none of that sounds like Resident Evil to me.
No, it doesn't. Well,
change those names to something else, and that's... You just have a different game.
It sounds like something that would be found in the Resident Evil movies, which are totally at that time were at their kind of height and popularity, and you can see how the movies influenced the games.
Which is kind of funny what happened, because we forgot to mention this during Resident Evil 4, but, you know, Capcom tried a lot of different things before they got to Resident Evil 4, and what we got out of that development cycle was the Devil May Cry franchise.
Oh, yeah.
Because it started off, the director wanted to try something completely different and was like, oh, this has no survival horror elements. This is untrue to the roots of Resident Evil.
Yeah.
So they made Devil May Cry a more action heavy, you know, yet gothic and demonic game. Then we get Resident Evil 4. So I find it very ironic that, like, at 5, someone didn't step in and go, this isn't it.
Yeah.
Let's just call it something else, mm-hmm. change these character names, and put out, like, a different franchise. Mm-hmm. Let's start a new franchise, because it worked out the first time.
But that's the thing. It's like, when you say you're going to start a new franchise, it doesn't have the name recognition that Resident Evil has. And that's why probably they're like, ah, oh, fuck it, who cares? It's Resident Evil. People are going to buy it no matter what. We can do everything we want. So
I think this also, you know, shows a good shift in developers' minds
yeah.
from the GameCube PS2 era to the 360 era.
Yeah, a lot of kind of...
franchises yes. were king in these past two generations. We mentioned off mic, what has Capcom made that's an original IP, like, lately?
I mean, right now, nothing that I can think of. You mentioned...
Remember Me,
which I never even played. I
think that was, like, late, like, last...
It was last year. Generation.
Yeah, it was, like,
oh,
the
last... years ago.
It was, like, the last year of the last generation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't even... I don't know who... I know Capcom can publish it. I don't even know what studio worked on that game. But, yeah, it was just, like, it was their attempt at making a new franchise, and that fucking didn't work, because no one's asking for Remember Me 2. Maybe someone is. Let us know in the comments if you want Remember Me 2. Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, and then we, after Resident Evil 5, we get to 6. Or, as I like to call it, woman giving a blowjob to a giraffe. Because if you look at that box art, that is all you fucking see is a woman giving a blowjob to a giraffe.
I didn't notice it the first time, and then someone kind of drew an outline.
It's like,
that's it. I'm done.
Oh, God, and
they,
a mistake.
And if we did mention it, 4 isn't the only one that got remastered for next generation consoles. 6,
no, yeah.
6 and 5 also Thank did you. As well, so we can also return to those. I missed them out, so I have the opportunity to return. They didn't change the logo.
Because even when they were criticized for it, and it was made just a joke. The captain was like, "Oh, that's so immature." You know, they don't give a fuck. Plus,
you guys.
We spent all this money. They spent all this money on, you know, this promotional material. So, like, we're not going to fucking change this. So it is. It is
but how do you not see it?
Oh yeah, now it's impossible. But yeah, that's one thing I think. Should we review Resident Evil 5 and Resident Evil 6 down the line? Those remastered versions.
Honestly, like, September is the month of remasters. I'll definitely
review BioShock remaster.
Oh yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I really want to play that and 2. I really want to play 2. I never played 2.
I want to replay 2 specifically. I think it also comes with the DLC.
And you're ready to play Infinite, right?
Yeah. Maybe I'll just go, you know, try to replay the old Xbox 360 version. I might play Infinite. I'll give another chance, even though I probably won't like it. But
like I mention this off mic too. Mm-hmm. I'll probably grab the Origins Collection because those are also on Xbox One.
Yeah, yeah, which was 0 and 1. That's
right. And I think. If that performed well, they were hoping to do a Code Veronica in 2, I think.
I think, yeah, there is a HD...
There's already a HD Code Veronica, right?
Is there?
It just maybe isn't disc.
There's too many. Yeah. But I know that they're working on a 2, but it's actually heavily influenced, I think, by 4, where it's going to be... Like, it's like a reimagining, I think. You can correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, but it's a reimagining of 2 where it's like Resident Evil 4.
Oh, okay.
Where it's kind of that third-person perspective,
cool.
Which I think would be really cool. Hopefully, again, it's not too much of an action game.
Yeah.
It's more of a survival horror. But yeah, kind of to
convince me I should play 6.
Yeah, it's
go ahead.
I can't. I mean, the woman giving a blowjob to a giraffe is the only thing.
There's
I
a
can
new
say.
Character in this one, though, right?
Oh fuck!
Somebody.
What's
son?
His name? Jake? Jack? I don't remember. I gotta look it up.
Jake Jeffries.
Jake. Jake Mueller, who is the bastard son. Of Albert Wesker, which apparently, you know, Albert Wesker, he was fucking everybody back then. He didn't give a
you
shit.
Saw him in those shades,
I,
didn't you?
In those
trench coat.
How could you not? But yeah, it is Jake Mueller. But yeah, I mean, really, it's the Capcom just doubling down. It's like, this is an act. I remember when they were marketing this game, when they were just, everyone from Capcom, the developers and the publishers were talking about, it's like, look, we're going after that Call of Duty on us. Call of Duty is the biggest franchise out right now. I mean, this game, I think, came out in 2012. Or 2011, 2012. So at that time, that's when Call of Duty's like fucking everywhere. You had all those different entries. And they're like, yeah, it's an action fucking franchise now. And where it's all co-op. You can play as co-op. You have, I think, 4 different campaigns. One which is Leon S. Kennedy and some fucking woman I've never heard of. And their campaign, it was the most Resident Evil out of all of those people, where you kind of go to this small, secluded town that's been infected with this zombie whatever virus, mm-hmm. whatever TG, whatever virus
it's still
it
sounding like Leon is the best.
Yeah, no, he is. And basically, it's the most survival horror of those games, but even then, it's very action-y. And then the other campaigns, which are all fucking terrible, you got Chris Redfield and mini Chris Redfield, who's not as bulky as Chris, but, you know, he's still pretty bulky. And they're in China, and it's a total just kind of Gears of War, which I love that franchise, but it's not a horror franchise, where it's inspired, where they're just fighting all these giant monstrosities and these zombies that are firing guns and everything like that.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they're just firing guns, and they're firing okay. gooey guns, and it's okay. like, okay, they're flying around on their bat wings. And then the third campaign is with Jake Mueller and some girl he's with. I can't remember what the fuck her name. What's her name? No one cares. and that game is like, it's, I can't even describe it. It's like, you're not even using guns all that much, but you're like fighting people. Like, because of the fact that he has
a super arm?
He has like, well, he has superpowers because of his dad.
Of course.
Was a super
of course, yeah.
zombie guy. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, he has all these powers and you're fighting like this different version, take on the nemesis. And really it's like a boss battle type. The thing where anytime you're with these characters, and then the fourth campaign, which I think is unlockable, but maybe they patched in where you unlock. I can't forget if it was DLC, if it was unlockable. But I remember they patched in where you also play as Ada Wong, who apparently has been blamed. But Ada Wong's been this long recurring character in the Resident Evil franchise. You know, she's fucking Leon on the side, you know, all that good stuff. But
she's sexy. And
she's
foreign.
Sexy. She's sexy. She's very foreign. They point that out very a lot, quite a few times. But yeah, apparently she's blamed for this. Biological disaster, which is why all these different teams are going off all these different parts of the world to like, well, it's the zombies and viruses and they're giant animals. And yeah, it's pretty much just an action game and there's just nothing redeemable about it. And yeah, I think the one thing that they've marketed the game on is like all these characters are meeting for the first time. And where I remember in the trailer, even I got excited by this because like the tail end of the trailer is like Chris Redfield and Leon S. Kennedy squaring off because they're both like it's basically like Civil War of the Resident Evil franchise where they're both disagreeing over Ada and Chris Redfield and Leon Kennedy are just fucking going at it. They're just punching each other. It's just awesome. And you know, Chris Redfield is he's so bulky, his muscles are just like, oh, he can't move very fast. Leon S. Kennedy's just punching him with karate moves and everything. Really cool scene. It's like for 2 minutes and then that's it. And
that's odd though, like, because Chris would definitely win.
He can't move fast.
Yeah, but like he's zombie. Like he beats up Spider-Man and Wolverine and the Hulk. I think he beats up Dormammu.
Chris. what Captain America?
He also beats up MODOK. I saw him once also punch a fireball back at Reed.
Is it? Yeah, I believe that. Yeah.
I'm not kidding. It's in Marvel versus Capcom
3. Marvel. Oh,
man,
okay.
You are slow on the uptick.
I'm not feeling well.
We're going to blame it on that.
I'm not feeling well today, but no, you're very true. Yeah, it's like, he was pretty much his character from Capcom, or the Marvel versus Capcom. Ridiculous. But yeah, it's just such a fucking disappointing game. And the story is dumber than any Resident Evil story before, which is saying something. Jill Sandwich is fucking, you know, Shakespeare compared to what we got in Resident Evil 6. So, I mean, even though it sell, I think it sold between like 6 million and 7 million copies of the game, which I don't think was as much as 5 or even as 4. But even then, I think Capcom realized at the time, like, ooh, we may have hurt our brand.
Yeah,
and if the movies certainly were hurting it already. And but that's what that I'm, was like. Mm.
That's what I alluded to earlier when I mentioned like 7 has a big uphill climb because you did mention 5 did really well, but that's because of the goodwill
commercially.
Of,
yes,
yeah,
commercially.
Because that's of the goodwill of
absolutely.
4.
Absolutely.
6 did bad because 5 was not great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to happen to 7, where it's a great game that's hurt because 6 sucked ass.
I don't think it is because one of the things that time heals all wounds. Resident Evil 6 came out in 2012, and Capcom, with the exception of some of the fucking minor releases with, like, I forget what it was, but there's a Resident Evil... Like,
Revelations?
Revelations.
Remember,
was,
they misspelled the box.
Revelations, I remember that. That was funny. And then you got the return of Barry. Barry Berenson, or Barry, I forget what the fuck his name is, but it's Barry, he's back, and he's even fatter, and just like, I'm depressed, chill. But yeah, they released some side titles, but no one fucking cares about those. But here's the thing, time heals all wounds, and there's been such a, really, what, 4, and it's going to be 5 years by the time we finally get to 2017 when they released 7, so I think there's been enough time where people kind of get the sour grapes of 6 and are ready for something nice and sweet and gooey. Hopefully very gooey. Resident Evil 7. And the thing with 7 is that it looks so different from 6, where it's like, you look, if you put those games next to each other, which I, you know, again, with from what we've seen of 7, there's nothing similar about them with the exception of maybe there's something to do with Umbrella.
Yeah.
You know, other than that, it's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. There's like a crazy ghost woman. There's like these old people that I'm stuck in their house and they're kind of trying to kill me. It's like, is this Resident Evil? No, but that's why, I mean, do you have any thoughts on 6? I mean, you said you didn't play the game, so.
No,
do you have any,
because it's just, I didn't want to support, like, that idea. Mm-hmm. I had no interest in it. I heard everything about it, like, previous, as it was coming out. And it was just like, no, this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. Which is the opposite of Seven. I've seen one trailer and was like, this is for me. I want this. I want to prove to Capcom that this is what they should be doing.
No, I think so. What we saw, I remember when they revealed at the PlayStation conference at E3, that's the most recent E3. I'm thinking, wow, everything about this is so creepy. I didn't even expect it to be Resident Evil when I was looking at it. I was like, it was rumored that Capcom would have premiered like the first Resident Evil trailer at that E3. But I didn't think it was this because it was just so dramatically different than what we've seen. And just like the sound, the song they had playing and just the creepiness. And it's like, it's kind of, they were kind of almost, it had its B-movie sensibilities where it was almost riffing on the Blair Witch Project because there's this whole like found footage aspect, which I thought was really, really fun. And it's also playing with other things where it's not only, like, clearly there's some type of, like, maybe, like, a virus or infection, but there's, like, almost, like, a supernatural element that's been added to it, because in the... Because I don't know... Have you played the demo for 7?
Mm-mm.
I played the demo on my PS4. It was on my PS4. And there are key moments in that demo where if you look in certain directions at a key time, you see, like, this ghost-type creature
I love when games do that.
And it's only for, like, a second or two, and it follows you around the house. And I'm thinking, okay, is this a supernatural element that they're introducing to the franchise? Which is totally new. I don't think there's any... They've ever done that before. Or could this be a new type of virus where it's affecting what you see? And I'm thinking, that's fucking creative, and it's different enough from the G and the T and the C virus.
It allows you to try something new without really breaking the reality of your franchise.
Yeah, you get to have your cake.
Or Alice is in this game.
Alice, that would be the biggest like fuck you.
I would love it.
She's canon. She's canon. Mila Jovovich.
I would love it. Just like not like I would actually love the move, but if that were to happen, as I was playing, I'd be like, "You sly fuckers!"
Yeah. That takes balls. But yeah, for me, like I said, I'm excited for the future Resident Evil. From what we've seen with 7, I think it's a step in the right direction.
Definitely.
I have no complaints in regards to that. But I think, you know, for people who are interested in the Resident Evil franchise, I encourage people to replay certainly 1, and eventually when 2 is remastered, 2. Seek out 3, because I think it's worth playing. And definitely check out 4, which is fucking available in everything at this point. And you can probably skip 5 and 6. John and I will get to those games and we'll review them for you and talk about how we don't like them. I really want you to play 6 and to experience that fucking gem. But
I do want to go through the whole franchise because they're all pretty readily available on current gen consoles.
With the exception
which is
of
kind
3.
Of crazy.
Yeah, exception of 3.
Which Capcom forgot about it.
Yeah, I think they did. It's too bad because you know what? I really care about the Nemesis. He just seems. Yeah, that's what he was falling around. He was just misunderstood. Hug me. Hug me, John. So, if you don't want to hug the Nemesis, that's fine. But for everyone else there who wants to hug the Nemesis or people who want to, to communicate more of the We Are Error fan base.
See, I don't want to hug the Nemesis because I much prefer online interactions.
Yeah, do you? Oh, that's a very good point. So, actually, you can follow We Are Error on Twitter at We Are Error Cast.
Mm-hmm.
You can also follow me at Chris J. Herman. And John, what's your Twitter handle?
JJ Romo, J-A-Y-J-A-Y. Mm-hmm. Romo, like the quarterback?
Yeah.
Football?
Yeah. Fucking sports. Yeah, that's the thing. And of course, guys, always check out the rest of our content, oneofus.net. We have some great stuff. We're going to be posting a lot of more written content in the weeks to come. And, of course, you know, I think Chrissy's doing all his stuff and all our reviews. And so, well, we're checking
out. I see there's interviews coming up you might want to keep an eye on,
There
too.
Are some spooky interviews coming up.
That was too close. You were almost a Jill sandwich.